got a spade and a big axe and 100 miles square of land in turnabout. My old horse is weary, but sincerely I believe that he can pull a plow. Well, I've moved into the jungle, I'll be agricultural rumble to grow my own food. And I'll dig a plow and scrape the weeds till I succeed in seeing cabbage growing through. Now I'm a farmer.
Well, look who's here. It's the Dirtbag Crew.
That's right, in person.
I don't know that, Ty, I don't know that Jim's microphone is up and hot yet. No, I think it is. Okay, this is Glenn Andreessen, here beside you now until 12 noon, and here beside me, to my right, Jim's left, is my co-pilot.
Yes.
Nice Jim. Jim Gilbert, although his mic is still not hot, Ty. Are you working on that part?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's working on it. Okay. Well, well, just off the bat, we'll say that we are a garden variety show, mostly centering on edible plants, which we have both been growing for the vast majority of our lives. Jim, vaster than me.
Only because I'm probably older than you a little bit.
Yes.
You'll catch up with me.
That's right. But you're still going strong out there in the farm. That's why we get a farm report every month here on the Dirtbag. We are in our year-end membership drive. Very not in your face. I will mention that if you contribute to KBOO or any other kind of cultural arts organization in Oregon, that you can qualify to make a tax-free, essentially, contribution to the Oregon Cultural Trust, which will, if you say you donate $120, you have become a sustaining member of KBOO. Then you can also donate $120 to the Oregon Cultural Trust, and then that becomes a tax credit. Now, we're not going to talk about tax law here, but a tax credit is much more valuable than a tax deduction because it's one for one for your taxes.
So if you contribute $120 to each, is the tax credit $240?
No.
No.
Just $120. Your credit, your contribution to the Oregon Tax Trust, that's the amount of your credit. Uh-huh. But you can do good.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we'd love to see have everybody help and keep us on the air.
Yeah. So, kboo.fm, and you can click on the donate button, and any contribution helps.
Are you here? Am I live? Live yet?
No, let's try.
Is this mic on here? Yeah, let's try this mic over here, Jim. Okay. Yeah, let me just move that one over there.
Get that one out of the way. Now say something.
Okay.
Yep, there we go.
Oh, good. Yeah.
We'll try that.
Super.
Okay, well, let's give it a little rundown here of the shoe, a really big shoe. And I'm just bringing this on Jim right now. But I thought it would be fun to just mention and maybe get a little brief information on our most used tool in the last month. Now, that's going to require some thinking and some figuring out, since we don't have trackers on each of our tools to see how long they've been used. But, you know, it's been your pruner, or in my case, it's been my battery chainsaw. That's what I've been doing mostly.
Well, you know, I'm right with you. I'm doing the same thing.
'Tis the time.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, in fact, yesterday, a sunny day, I was like so thrilled. I had my little Husqvarna saw out, and I was removing some unwanted plants from the field. And
you were pruning at ground level?
I was pruning at ground level.
I see.
Yeah, that's heavy-duty pruning.
Yeah.
That's the end-of-the-line pruning.
Yeah, that's right. So that gives you an idea of what we've been doing.
Yeah.
In these nicer days.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny because I thought about pruners. I thought, well, maybe next show I'd mention the pruners that I use because I really like them. But
well, if you use them, they'll come a month when you do use those.
But yeah. Well, I used them actually. I've been using those too
a lot. Okay.
As part of this work we're doing right now, was kind of reviving some fields, some areas where trees are old and we don't need them anymore, or I was doing some pruning, basal pruning on apricots. We have a special greenhouse that right now we built a greenhouse to put plants in that don't want to be out in the rain.
Can I go in there?
You can come. Yeah, I mean, it's a great place to work on a rainy day. This is amazing, yeah. You know. So I was doing a bunch of pruning on apricots.
Okay.
So.
Well, just one tool per 30-day period.
Got it. Okay.
Okay, well, that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Well, Jim has our plant of the month, quince, and he actually brought one in that is about the size of a softball, maybe just a little bit smaller than a softball, but well larger than a baseball.
You know, I'm really bullish on quince right now. We actually were able to import some quince many, 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 many years ago when I first started traveling to the former Soviet Union.
Now, when you say quince, do you mean the fruit or the wood?
The plants.
Okay.
Yeah, and in that part of the world, they have quince that are sweet. And ones that we had in America at that time were not sweet.
Uh-huh.
And so that actually kind of revolutionized, in a sense, the quince varieties that you can grow here. And so this is one of the sweet ones, variety we call Crimea. And, it's a fragrant fruit and beautiful, I think. Now, this one, unfortunately, is somewhat cold damaged, which we'll talk about a little later when we talk about weather, because our little liberal nook location is quite different than your rather up here in Portland.
Yeah, we'll get to when we talk about our new hardiness zone.
That's right. But this one, still, I mean, we make quince crisp. That's kind of our dish of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so good. Like, compared to apple crisp is good, but quince crisp is off the charts. I mean, it's so much more flavorful. The fruit, like I say, the fruit's fragrant. And I mean, it's just really, really good. And quince fruit is big. So my grandkids were visiting recently, and we went out and looked at some of the trees, and we found a quince that was 2 pounds.
What do you think that one is? Do you think
it was the variety was Kuganskaya.
So bigger than that one.
It was bigger than this one, yeah. This one, and I said this one is Crimea. This is probably a pound or more. I mean, it's a good-sized fruit. And anyway, I like the color of the fruit. It's so fragrant. I, fondle it and smell it.
We might as well just keep talking about our plant of the month here. When did you harvest them?
Yeah, they were ripe in October, mid to late October.
Uh-huh. And so?
And we harvested a lot. I mean, I probably have, I don't know, 50, 60 pounds of quince in the cooler.
Oh, that's only 50 or 60 of them, though.
Well, that's true. Maybe I should recount.
But or fewer if you have the other variety.
Right. And some were not harvested because, I didn't get to them. And I mean, they sure fall on the ground and you can still, I mean, they're not bad. I just only took the ones off the tree.
Yeah. Uh-huh. They are kind of the quince that I have, which is a real fuzzy one. I don't know the variety of it. Mm. It's not that large. It's probably a tennis ball or to baseball size.
Maybe you're thinking of flowering quince.
No.
This guy's yellow?
Yeah, it's definitely a quince.
But it's
kind of fuzzy.
Yeah,
fuzzier than this one.
We should get you one of these kind, because that's pretty small for a quince.
Well, they're never that large, but maybe tennis ball, you're right, they're larger than that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, yeah, these are, I mean, the varieties that we have fruiting out at the nursery are all of this size or bigger.
Uh-huh. And they're grafted, but I don't know what size does the tree get?
Oh, the biggest trees on the place are probably 8 feet. I mean, they're related to apples and pears, but they're not so super vigorous. I mean, I'm sure they could get
bigger. Mine tree is at least 20 feet by 20 feet.
Oh, interesting.
But it's an old variety. This is the neighboring property.
Mm-hmm.
And my house, which is now 100 years, more than 100 years old, was the orchard. It was the farmhouse, and it was an orchard there. That when I bought my property, there was no fruit trees on it. But on the neighboring property, which I've since acquired, there were three, but the plum, a green gauge plum, fell over in a wind one time. But I'm growing its legacy because I took a cutting, and that's a great plum, green gauge. But there's also a pear, a double pear, an Anjou and a Bartlett, and then there's just quince. So they're old.
Yeah, sounds like it. Yeah, it's interesting. Well, yeah, these newer varieties came onto the scene in the early 90s. Anything before that would be...
Yeah, this has probably been the 1890s.
yeah. Well, it's... And then some people, I've seen quins in stores that are fuzzy and green and are not very yellow at all, and they apparently were rootstock. You know, so like an orchardist would have a pear tree grafted onto quince. That's typically, it can be used as a rootstock, and the top would die, so the rootstock would grow and bear this fruit, and it's very inferior fruit. So,
well, I wonder if that's what I have. Yeah. No, I mean, it's, I don't know. Yeah. I can send you a photo of one. I think there's still one hanging on in the limbs.
Yeah, I'd love to see it.
Okay.
That'd be great. And then I should mention also, several years ago, I met a woman came to Corvallis because the quince collection of the United States, the variety collection, is at the USDA Germplasm Repository in Corvallis. So she came there to talk about her book, which I actually brought a copy of. It's called Simply Quince by Barbara Gazarian. And it's got full of recipes and information. It's a really fun book. And I don't know how available it is. It's my own book, but I imagine it's still
purchased. I bet you it's somewhere.
Yeah. And I would really encourage folks who are interested in this fruit to get a copy of this book, because it's the most extensive English language book on quince I've ever seen.
Oh, okay. Simply Quince, the name of that book.
Yep.
Okay, well, I will mention that if you have a gardening question, please feel free to give us a call, 503-231-8187. We did have someone write in a question to us within the last month, and after we take our first musical break, that means you, Ty. Ty's going to sleep in there. And I'll just set up our the theme is the same theme that I had a year ago, and that is to honor some of the musicians who have passed away this last year. And I went to the Wikipedia site on musicians that passed away, and there's hundreds, if not a thousand, that of some note. But the ones that I've picked are ones that that have had an impact on my life, however small that is. I mean, it's very small, but these are songs that I've listened to for years and so know a little bit about the groups. But the first one will require, maybe this is old news. I'm sure it's old news to some people, but the band Marshall Tucker Band.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? Well, nobody in the group is named Marshall Tucker. The story is... they needed to come up with a name for the band back in the, I'm not sure if this was the 60s or the late 60s or the early 70s. And they saw a name, I believe it was on a piano, and Marshall Tucker. And so they just decided to use Marshall Tucker. I don't know what they were thinking it was, but what it turned out to be was the piano tuner, who was a blind man named Marshall Tucker. And he died this year at the age of 99.
Wow. Oh.
So one of the songs, maybe from their first album, I don't remember. But this is called Ramblin'. always hate cutting these guys off, but we've got gardening to talk about.
That's right.
Marshall Tucker Band, the Ramblin', in honor of their namesake.
That's
the piano tuner.
Nice song.
Ramblin' on My Mind. Yep. Well, no, that's just Ramblin'. Ramblin' on My Mind is an Eric Clapton tune.
Mm.
Okay, well, we made reference to this a little bit earlier, that the USDA, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, has come out with a new hardiness zone classifications. And when I did my Master Gardener training in 1990, or was that 1991? I don't remember. We were smack solid in 8A. I believe that's just what it was. And these are just, let me just read what I wrote down from the USDA website here. The plant hardiness zone map is based on the average annual extreme minimum winter temperature displayed as 10 degrees Fahrenheit zones, ranging from zone 1, which is the coldest, to zone 13, which is the warmest. I would suspect maybe Hawaii is zone 13, or some parts of Hawaii.
Probably, yeah.
Not all of them, because there's mountains there that have snow. Each zone is divided into half zones designated as an A and B. For example, 7A and 7B are 5 degrees Fahrenheit increments, representing the colder and warmer halves of zone 7, respectively. These designations serve as convenient labels and shorthand for communicating and comparing the extreme winter temperatures within the U.S. and Puerto Rico. Zone numbers are typically listed with the descriptions of perennial plants in catalogs and other sales information produced by commercial nurseries, plant suppliers, etc. Which is good information for us gardeners to have, so you know, is our plant hardy for this zone? And finally, all plant hardiness zone maps should serve as general guides for growing perennial plants. They are based on the average lowest temperatures, not the lowest ever. Zones in this edition of the USDA hardiness zone are based on 1991 to 2020 weather data. So every 30 years they update this. This does not represent the coldest it has ever been or ever will be in an area, but it simply is the average lowest winter temperatures for a given location for this 30-year span. Once again, 91 to 2020. Now, what I find very interesting about the website is that you can enter in your zip code and get even more zeroed in on what your zone is. And I found out my zone, 97211, is 9A. 9A. That's a whole zone different than when that I was all taught about. So the low being 20 to 25. But Jim, out there in the liberal nook,
last I heard, we're 8B.
And is that 15 to 25?
15 to 25, right.
So would 8A be
10 to 15?
10 to 15.
Yeah.
Well, you've been down that low.
You know,
in the last 30 years?
Well, yeah. I think we've been down to 5 degrees in the last 30 years. And in the last 40, well, in 89, 90, we got down to zero. That's the coldest I've seen there in 40 years.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, that's, I mean, zero would be 7A, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, and since then, I've never seen anything that cold. But I did see 5 degrees probably, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I don't know where they take these. Maybe it's in Molalla or. Yeah,
exactly.
Whatever.
Yeah. And, you know, it's sort of interesting. You'll commiserate with me on this, because when you, in the end of October, I think it was October 26th and 27th, something like that, we had two nights that got down to 20 degrees.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess we were into the 20s, 29 or 28. You know, and I could also give a plug for my weather app.
Yeah.
Because I can go to my phone right now and see what the low was for that day.
Uh-huh. Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. It's a great one.
Yeah. Cool. But, that, you know, 20 degrees was, I mean, it stopped ripening of everything. But that, and that was.
Not only ripening, but it could kill some other things.
Yeah. I mean, nothing was damaged, thankfully, but because it was a very short
Except
period
maybe
it was
this.
That cold. but it definitely stopped. And that's why I showed in this quince, you can see some cold damage on it, because this wasn't harvested before that. But some were, but this one wasn't.
Uh-huh.
And it didn't actually hurt the plant, the fruit. But you know, I mean, that's not so common for us to be that cold so early. But I call our, and we now call ourselves, we're the liberal nook. And what happens where we are, which is only 40 minutes south of Portland, but there's some hills to the north of us, and we're wind sheltered.
Yeah.
So the cold air comes down the Cascades, down the Mallala River, apparently, and spills into this area, which is surrounded by hills, and there's no wind, which was what, you know, it's unpleasant to have the wind here in Portland, but it does keep the temperature up.
Yeah.
So,
like, how cold did it get last night?
32.
Yeah, I don't know that ours dipped below 45 because we had the wind, and we have the wind now. It's not real. I mean, it's not bad being outside, but I'd rather be out in 35 sunny and no wind than 45 and with wind.
Yeah, and we drove home last night. We were actually in Portland, and we drove home, and the temperature dropped probably 10 degrees on our journey home. So, yeah, it's just, so we sort of figure that if plants and stuff do well, and it's more ripening for us, it's not so much like we're going to die from, the plants are going to die from cold weather, but it's the ripening, you know, they've got to ripen in a short season where we are, and if they do that, they're going to be fine anywhere in Oregon,
right,
or the Northwest. So.
Yeah, I heard one of the weather forecasters say recently that the only place for the wind, if there's a high pressure, you know, over middle Oregon or middle Washington, and the low pressure then over the Pacific, the only place between Canada and California that wind can go through is the gorge.
Yeah.
So it's no wonder we get that funnel.
Yep.
But like you said, it does keep us fogless most of the time, and maybe a little bit warmer.
Yeah, well, even like Aurora, which is not very far from us, further south in the valley than Portland, it's considerably warmer than we are because it has wind.
Yep. Yeah. Sometimes that's the wind is oftentimes a curse too when there's rain involved and then freezing rain, and that the east side just keeps the cold temperatures don't melt it off nearly as fast as even. On the west side of Portland.
There have been times when I've driven out of Portland and it's been snowing and, you know, like, wow, it's like really coming down, and I turn south on I-205 and I go a mile and the snow stops.
Yeah. So I encourage you to look up the USDA map. I don't have the website here, but it'd be easy to find it. And enter in your zip code and find out, hey, I could take a chance on this.
Sure, I can grow oranges here.
Well, you can. Maybe you could leave them outside.
yeah. I mean, of course, you know, it's a mixed blessing, this warm temperature increase, because what also goes along with it is climate change and all of the bad things that has been bringing on to the world. So,
yeah, you know. Yeah.
But I guess we just have to...
The weather is what it is right now, so...
Yeah, it's what it is. Not much we can do about it.
Right. Okay. Well, before we get to our garden stumper, as I put down here, what about all that rain? Whew.
Yeah, yeah.
Anything that, we've had these atmospheric rivers, so-called. I don't think that's a meteorological term, but we know what it means.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Pretty good amount of rain. You know, our soils got, it was really dry going into the fall.
Uh-huh.
I mean, super dry. So, finally, we had a pond. There's a couple of ponds near us that were nothing, and they're finally have water in them now. So, it wasn't terrible for us, at least, to have the rain. I think it was good in some ways. You
know. Well, what about? Is there anything that we need to say for plants? I can pass along, at least in my growing area. We did a remodel 12 years ago now, and so we needed permits and things like that, and I think I've told this story before too. Before we started building, and we had our architect plans, and one of the city's inspectors came out and he says, "Well, I'm not telling you how to do it here," because our architect had in dry wells and French drains and whatnot, because they don't want you shunting your water into the street. Hmm. You want to take care of it on site. And he says, you know, I'm not going to tell you what to do here, but I'll just mention that here in Northeast, where we are, and he didn't say this, but because of all the river cobble from the Missoula floods and whatnot, we have excellent drainage. Hmm. And he said, they don't even require you to have to shunt the water away from the foundation.
Hmm. Hmm.
So we paid our architect to redo it, and I do shunt them away as much as possible. But so, you know, a lot of rain really doesn't matter too much. But if you have standing water where your plants are, then, for example, dahlias or rhubarb, you don't want those tubers in water because they can rot.
Yeah, choosing your planting site's important for that. There are, I mean, just on our little farm, you know, there are areas where there's much, after a hard rain, like, well, maybe not this rain, but eventually water will be standing for a lot longer than it should. And you can see it. I mean, you can see the grass doesn't look good there. You know, if we don't plant stuff there anymore because the trees didn't do well and root rot and so forth. So, you know, it is important to keep that in mind. And you know, if you have to build up soil, we do that occasionally. I mean, not for this so much for that reason, but we do make raised beds, you know, to just get better drainage.
Yeah.
You know,
raised beds, you know what I say about that, that dry soil warms up quicker,
mm-hmm.
and raising the soil lets it dry out sooner.
Yep.
So that's the main benefit of that. So
yeah, it's a good thing.
Okay, so just pay attention not only to the hardiness map, your zone, but the location where you're going to be planting.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can, you know, it's good, like you've noticed through the years, you know, if you just move into a place, it might be before you make any major changes, is to wait a year just to see what you see,
mm-hmm.
because things are going to come up too that you won't know about.
Yeah. And you can observe the native vegetation too, what's growing in a spot. I mean, if it's, you know, a lot of times there's, you know, different plants that will grow in the wetter soils and the more poorly drained soil,
mm-hmm.
then they won't grow other places. And so, you know, that obviously you want to avoid that for fruit trees.
Yeah.
And you know, things that don't want to have their feet wet.
This is kind of off the subject here because it has nothing to do with edible plants, but I read it in the Leech Botanical Garden newsletter in the last 2 or 3 years that there is a plant that is now growing wild in England that is native to here, but it's a pest there.
Hmm.
A very invasive plant. You know, want to know what that is?
Yeah.
Skunk cabbage. It's a beautiful flower. Although I don't know that people harvest it for bouquets or anything like that.
That's interesting.
Yeah, not a problem here in its native habitat, but.
Well, people who live on the South Coast know about gorse,
yeah.
which was a little gift from that part of the world.
Oh, we know,
to
yeah.
us.
We have lots of things. Yeah, so. Anyway, okay, Ty, you ready with our stumper theme? Our stumper theme? Mm-hmm. We'll have the answer to last month's, too, because that you had to write in for that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes, we have good news. We had quite a few correct responses and no wrong responses sent in last month to Jim's stumper, who will remind us what the question was.
Okay.
And the answer.
Having to remember myself what the question was, but it
doesn't have to be exact.
Yeah,
right.
Something about a nut.
No, oh, that was about me. Yeah, that's right.
That's right. Yeah, it was. So Oregon produces a nut crop, and it is the chief producer in the U.S. of that crop, And what is that? What and then what was that crop? And then I guess the second part of the question while we grow so many here of that, there's another country in the world that grows 90% of the world's supply. And what country is that?
And the answers?
And the answers are, the common name for us around here that grew up in Oregon is filbert, but the more common name for the general public is hazelnut. And the country is the name of the special bird that many people consume on Thanksgiving.
Oh.
And that's not chicken.
And it's not tofurkey either, is it?
But anyway, so I suspect that everybody knows Turkey is the name of the country.
Yeah, just a little side note here, and I've probably mentioned this too, but maybe we have new listeners, that I grew up in the southern Willamette Valley near Eugene, and for three or four summers, I worked on a truck farm. They grew a dozen varieties of edibles, and one of them was filberts, but that wasn't they just had a few acres of that, but they owned or leased, I don't know how many thousands of acres, but they grew corn, sugar beet seed, beets, bush beans, mint, some other things there too. And that was back in the day when they'd hire, high school students who could move pipe.
Yeah.
And before they have the big pivots now, as they call these water cannon type things that I don't know what they do. But anyway, had a chance several years ago now, probably 5 or 6 years ago, to talk to the matriarch of the farm, who has since passed away. She was 95 at that point. But she mentioned that virtually 100% of their crop now was filberts. Because that's where the market is. And maybe the labor is pretty easy.
Well, the price was up pretty high about 3 or 4 years ago, and people, maybe even a little bit past that, a little further than that back, and people started planting them, and there were a lot of filberts going in. Now the price is pretty low, and it's kind of an interesting situation because it's a commodity, and of course, if Turkey has a good crop, and they have inflation there apparently, so the price, what they're getting for it is not much. That affects, of course, what happens in Oregon, because Oregon is only doing 10% of the hazelnut or filbert harvest in the world.
Yeah.
So
hopefully they have something diverse. They've diversified something.
Yeah.
They were big mint producers when I was growing up, and still don't really like to smell peppermint. They had a distillery, and it was just so strong that it's just almost nauseating.
Oh, that's too
and
bad.
So I still, when I smell that, I don't know that I want that. But anyway, thank you, Jim.
Yeah.
The new stumper is a three-parter. And at least we could start out by requiring you to get all three of them. The winner that from both Jim's and for the one that's coming up here will now be able to, or not now, will get a free hand garden tool sharpening from Coley Farm Store at 42nd and Alberta Street there in Northeast, Coley Farm Store.
Mm-hmm.
So, three-parter. And also, this doesn't have anything to do with edibles, at least for most people. This has to do with Christmas trees, another commodity that Oregon grows. And in fact, I believe is the leading producer of Christmas trees in the United States. So, anyway, question number one. What state or country receives the most Christmas trees grown in Oregon? And I'll just give you a hint. It's about 45%.
Wow. That's a lot.
That's a lot to one place.
Mm-hmm.
That's also a hint.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then true or false? More fake Christmas trees are purchased than real Christmas trees. And another true or false? Christmas trees are grown and harvested in all 50 states. Okay, so if you know the answers to that, 503-231-8187. Coincidentally, that is the same number to call if you have a gardening question. 503-231-8187. If you would like to donate to KBOO, we don't have operators standing by. Oh, they're sitting down now. It would be the best, or the only option is you could come, or you could mail a letter, to, a donation. But the easiest is to go to the website, kboo.fm, and donate now. Easy, peasy.
Yep.
And pleasing.
Yep. And you get a tax credit. If you
get a tax deduction you itemize, but you don't get the credit unless donate the same amount to the Oregon Cultural Trust.
That's right. So if you're sitting on a whole bunch of income and need some deductions, KBOO is your place.
And if you want some tax credits,
yeah, there you go.
Then I think it's up to $1,000 for a joint return, $500 each. So you could donate. You and your partner could donate up to $1,000 to this station or to the you'd be surprised at the number of organizations. There's hundreds, if not 1,000. And so just check it out, and KBOO is one of those.
Great.
Most radio stations are.
Great.
Most non-commercial radio stations.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
Okay, yes, it's time for our second memorializing of a player. This one happens to be the drummer from Three Dog Night. I wasn't a huge Three Dog Night fan, except for this one song. I mean, I like the other ones, you know, Joy to the World and Jeremiah Was a Bullfrog. That's Joy to the World. But this happens to be one of the drummers. They had various musicians that played, but Floyd Sneed played in the late 60s and early 70s. And this is Out in the Country. Three Dog Night, Out in the Country. You know, that was, 50 years ago. And they're talking about Before the Breathing Air Is Gone then.
I was talking with a woman yesterday who is interested in sharing this film that we've been working on, and who works at Chemeketa Community College. And I was telling her a little bit about my history. In 1967, I moved from the city to the country.
Uh-huh.
And in those days, we called ourselves country freaks. I hadn't used that term in a long time, but this song reminded me of that.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, let's... I had another dirtbag dictionary term that was that I was going to talk about, and then one of our regular listeners, now I can't remember his name.
Heath.
Yes, thank you, Jim. he wanted to know about compost tea. And I thought, well, I haven't talked about that in a long time, and you just don't hear too much about it now. Did you ever use or experiment with compost tea, Jim?
No, not really.
And this is different than leachate. We'll say that was, you know, when you have compost, or oftentimes there'll be liquid that runs out to the bottom. And this is particularly ones that aren't in the outside, but are inside the plastic bin or whatnot. And you know, the water has to go somewhere if it's not being consumed. And like in a worm bin, but that might be anaerobic, even. And so with compost tea, what we're actually talking about is you get machines that will actually bubble up through water that has a starter of compost, and it doesn't have to be much. But it has to be good compost, because what we're trying to grow in this warmer water is mostly bacteria. So we can have way more bacteria than would normally be growing in 24 hours, because not only do we have this starter compost, but you're feeding it, oftentimes it's molasses, just, you know, a carbohydrate, so that the bacteria can feed on it and then divide. And so you end up with just probably trillions, well, I'm sure it is, in this. And then you can use this compost tea not as fertilizer, because there's not a whole lot of fertilizer in it, but the bacteria can be used in at least two ways. One is that you can just drench the soil to inoculate the soil that may be missing some of these species of bacteria. Now, while we have trillions of bacteria, I'm not sure how many species of bacteria there could be. 100, 1,000, who knows? And the idea is that you're just giving the soil, you know, the shotgun approach, you're feeding the soil all of the bacteria, and then they'll colonize in your soil and it'll be healthier. The other way that you can use compost tea is as a leaf drench. The idea being that with sunlight, harsh sunlight, you know, which would be more with ozone depletion, or chemicals, or just air pollution, would compromise the bacteria that are colonizing on the leaf surfaces. So the theory is, and the proof, the research shows that if you were to coat the leaves top and bottom, that once again you can inoculate those leaves to replace or replenish the bacteria that are missing or are have somehow not there. And stores kind of really got on board with this in the aughts, and maybe into the early 2010s to 13, 14, 15. And you could buy compost tea by the gallon or whatnot, but you had to use it within 24 hours, because once you start bubblating, stop bubble, you know, the air coming through it, then the bacteria, because they need oxygen. These are anaerobic bacteria, and when there's no more oxygen, they're going to use up what's in the water there pretty quickly, you know, 24 hours. And so you have to use it right away. And it was pretty cheap, you know, $8 or $9 a gallon of it. And, mm-hmm. You know, you could cut it with water and spread it in your garden. And when I was doing work with Metro, the natural gardening program, we had several bubblers, or brewers, as they called them. And we spent hundreds of dollars on these things. You know, people were manufacturing them, and I'm kind of out of that biz now, so I'm not, you know, I don't have my finger on the pulse of what's going on, but I don't see them advertised much. But then I'm not looking.
Yeah.
Either. But I still use a lot of compost. So.
It's good stuff for sure. You know, it's just, you know, for a farm, our, like for us, it's a little bit challenging because, you know, it takes some labor to make it. And we don't have a lot of that.
Yeah, the brewers that I had would make, I'm not sure how many gallons at a time. They were pretty good size, you know, 20 gallons. Mm-hmm. And so you could use it, put it in a tank sprayer and do it, you know, for that. But
yeah.
The other thing that I'll mention here, and then we'll we can just mention that the we'll talk about seeds and catalogs coming up. But what's annoying me, this isn't major at all, so I'll get through this quickly, but it annoys me when you see reader boards that mix and match their letters, or I shouldn't say that, but they'll use, for example, an upside down W for an M. And you can tell the difference. Or they're all capital letters, and then they use an L, a small case L. You know, and it just annoys me.
Well, Glenn, you know, I've got to actually mention something that annoys me too a bit, and it's because listening to that music we just listened to, it about the drummer who passed away, reminded me of the band, and Alberta Rose Theater every Thanksgiving weekend puts on the Next Waltz, which was sort of a tribute to the Last Waltz, which was the film about the band, and which was
their last concert.
Actually, it's called the Last Waltz. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's in their last concert.
Right. And it's a good one.
Yeah. And it is really good. And I really love going and hearing this music at the Alberta Rose Theater, except they play it too loud. And I've written to them, and I don't get any response when I write to them. I say, look, you know, the audience is mostly 60 or over, and it's so loud you can't understand the words that the singer is singing, which is part of the show to me, you know, and it's very frustrating. And I take earplugs so I can protect my ears, but you know, still, it's. I mean, the last time we went, it was like so loud that it was vibrating in my chest. I could feel it. I don't know why they do that. I mean, what's the big deal? You know, I went to a tribute concert for John Prine. Now, John Prine's a poet. You know, I mean, his words are when you listen to his songs, it's the words. And again, it was so loud, the background music, that you couldn't hear the woman or man who were speaking the words. So if anybody out there can talk to the Alberta Rose Theater, please ask them to turn it down a little bit. Okay.
Okay. Let's see what happens here. Right. Okay. Well, we'll just make brief mention of the fact... just brief, and then we'll hit our last song, and then we'll finish up with the documentary update. This is the time. I'm already getting garden catalogs. Mm-hmm. And like I said in our blurb online, I said, if you haven't gotten any, you're lucky. Because some of them are pretty big, but they're coming in, and it gives you a chance. But this is the time when we have time inside. I mean, Jim's working outside because it's so windless and balmy down there in the liberal nook.
It does rain once in a while.
Yeah. But that's the time, and this is the time to be planning and ordering those seeds or plants before the rush is on.
There's so many fun things to plant, whether it's, you know, seeds or plants themselves, or, you know, for those of us who like doing this, you know, it's an adventure. And my partner, Lorraine Gardner, she's totally into trying out different things. She's been on some beans that... I'll tell it. Maybe I'll ask her about it and tell it the next show. But these large, very large beans, and perennial beans.
Oh.
So that you don't have to replant them. They'll grow and produce beans every year.
And are they shelling beans or dry beans?
I believe they're dry beans.
Uh-huh.
And she got some from Poland. I mean, it was a pretty interesting story. So.
Well, we'll check your hardiness zone, and. Maybe.
Yeah.
That would, right, you can start a few new things here.
If you're 9B.
Yeah. Well, let's get to our last tune here for just a little bit so I can set it up here. And this is from the Atlanta Rhythm Section. Been one of my favorites. They don't exist anymore, but well, especially not because of their keyboard player, whose name is Dean Daughtry. I think that's how it's pronounced. And one of the songs that I listen to quite a bit from them is the old Classics 4 hit, Spooky. Maybe you don't recall that one right now, but I always wondered, well, so why did they do it? And then reading, you know, more about his death, well, he was a member of Classics 4 for a short time, a couple of years or something like that. But anyway, this is a good one to play around Halloween, but we'll do it now in honor of Dean's death. In fact, he was the last original member, touring member, so Spooky.
Say
Daughtry. He was the keyboard player. We didn't get to his solo there, but
good song.
Did that ring any bells to you?
Absolutely.
So, yeah, right. Probably the Classics 4 version, but he was a member of that group too. So, Well, let's see here. In our last few moments here, we will get an update from Jim on the Oregon story.
Yeah,
so to speak.
Yeah, and listeners, me, hopefully aren't getting tired of hearing about this because I think it's a fascinating story. And I wanted to just say momentarily or just briefly that the inspiration for me helping make this film was because I realized that the vast majority of Oregonians don't know how Oregon became such a great place to live, work, farm, and recreate. And when you drive outside of Portland or any city in Oregon, you drive not into strip malls and subdivisions, but you drive into farmland or forest land or, you know, some of our beautiful places. And that's not by accident. So this film that we worked on, that we've been making and now is finished, is honoring the people who created that system 50 years ago, the land use planning program, and also the people who protected our beaches, which is also very significant. And so we are looking for places to show the film, and we have some lined up. It's going to all be in January. That's our goal at this moment because we want to have show the film before the legislative session starts. There's a lot of efforts now. I mean, sadly, to diminish.
Nibbling on the edges.
Yeah,
there,
nibbling away. Death by a thousand cuts, I think they call it. So we really need folks to speak up and take action and say, hey, you know, let's keep this functioning and good like it is. It's really important for food security, for climate change, for everything that we love about, you know, about having farms. So the website is anoregonstory.com, all together, anoregonstory.com. And at this moment, we don't have the venues right up there, but we have, I can mention a couple that we're working on in the Portland area. One is January 17th at the St. John's Twin Cinemas. I hope that will work out. And another on the 28th out in Washington County, and I can't remember the name exactly where that's going to be.
We'll have another show before then. So.
Yes, we will have a show, and I'll definitely can mention it then. But I encourage folks to go to the website, because you can also listen or you can watch the trailer, which is pretty inspiring.
Could they also contact you if they have an idea of where to show them the film?
Yes, absolutely. You can actually contact us through the website, but mm-hmm. my personal email address is jgilbert@oregonsbest.com. And I'd love to hear from folks who have any thoughts about where we could, a venue where we could show this film, because it's an important story, and it's one that I've spent several years now making this film.
Yeah. And we've heard about it.
Yes, you've heard about it. Yep. And you know, the people who we've interviewed are heroes of mine. So.
Okay. Well, we'll have yet another update next month.
Great.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Okay, we're out of time. No answers on the stumper, so I'll just tell you quickly. The state is California. You can guess that. It's false. More real trees are sold than fake, and it is true that Christmas trees are grown in all 50 states.
Even Hawaii?
Sure.
Wow. It must be a different kind of tree there. I would.
Further up the mountain you go, the colder it gets.
I guess.
Yeah. So.
Cool.
Thanks for listening. Be well. Thanks for donating. See you next month.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 12 noon.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Jazz Lives, right after these news headlines.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria.